Hello, and today I am joined by Richie Barber, who is physiotherapy lecturer, but also has an extensive background working in Paralympic sport. And amazingly, he's also got a medal, which we'll touch more on a bit later on. I know that it is a semi-sore subject, but it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
So, Richie, how are you?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. Thanks for having me on. I've listened to a lot of your podcasts over the last few months, and it's just a pleasure to come and chat. So much appreciated.
No problem. No, I'm looking forward to speaking more with you about it. So, where are you from originally?
So I'm from Salford originally, and I've never really moved out the place. And I think the best way to sum me up is you can take the lad out of Salford, but you can't take the Salford out of the lad. And I think that is definitely me. So in my opinion, Salford is the best city in the world.
Well, that's good. And you've come full circle now, being back at the university as well.
Yes, absolutely. Salford University has been a massive part of my education and development, and there's no better way in terms of kind of giving back. I've always had an aspiration of coming back, and I'm sure we'll get onto that a little bit later on. And I was just honoured when they finally asked me to do it.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, amazing. So in terms of getting into this area, I know yours was a slightly unconventional route into getting into working in physiotherapy. You just talk to me about like growing up.
Yeah, so I grew up in the early 80s, mid 80s, early 90s, and at that particular time, I was in a position where I had a physical disability. I've got cerebral palsy, and physiotherapy was a massive part of kind of me learning to overcome some of the challenges that I faced. And I think my mum and dad kind of certainly put me on the right path when they really wanted me to have as near normal life as possible. Because in the early 80s and 90s, there was a real encouragement for students like me or children like me to kind of go down a route of special education and schooling in a better, safer environment. And they were very much kind of, no, we want him to go down this route. This is important. And I think that's where kind of physiotherapy has really helped me kind of master my kind of movement abilities and learn how to fail in a safe way so that I kind of bounce back stronger. So I think that's kind of the first point that kind of lit the fire of me wanting to be a physio, that kind of experiences as a patient and kind of seeing what the role was all about.
Right. And then, so for you, how did you get involved in some like the swimming activity that you
Yeah.
went on to do?
So in terms of kind of as a athlete, the consultant that worked with me was very clear in kind of the instructions that he gave to my mum and dad. And he said, oh, he'll never be able to run, he'll struggle to ride a bike, he'll need to find sports that he's going to be able to do safely. And luckily enough, my mum has a extensive history in swimming. So that seemed the most kind of obvious route really, in terms of physical activity and kind of exercise. So she kind of threw me in the water as early as possible. As we know, the brain is very plastic and it changes really quick. So, you know, once my mum and dad started to challenge me and push me, my window of opportunity in relation or win or envelope of function, if you like, in terms of physical activity and exercise just began to develop. So I learned how to run and I learned how to ride a bike and I was able to swim. And then off the back of that, really, opportunities and doors opened as I went on. So as my swimming started to wane a little bit and I was like, oh, I'm not sure whether I want to do it anymore, an opportunity came in relation to what's called an integrated swimming competition, if you like. So some able-bodied swimmers, some Paralympic swimmers, or some able-bodied and some disabled swimmers joined up to form a team. And that's where I started to kind of get another look at physio, because as my performances started to improve and I started to represent my country, and I was starting to see physio from a different perspective. So not only that kind of rehab space and that kind of management of pain, but more towards the performance kind of end of the spectrum. And that really started to light the fire of me actually wanting to to be one of those people that worked with athletes that not only had the rehab pain focus, but also the performance optimization focus. And when I finally did kind of retire from swimming, I just said to my teammates and to my coach, I said, I'll be back because I want to be the physio. And I think my earliest memory of retiring from swimming, I was a bit of a moody teenager, if I'm being honest. And I think from a reflection point of view, that when I did come into the role with Paralympic, with British Para Swimming, I think people still reflect on that person as being me, you know, that moody teenager. But what they kind of, or my perception was, they didn't really see how much evolution had gone through to get to the point that I'm at now. So when I did manage to get the job, I felt like it was really difficult to be Richie the physio when you were treating people that you actually swam with and you competed against and you trained with. And it's a really strange dynamic to be in that position.
Yeah. So how old were you then when you were doing the swimming then?
So I was, when it all kicked off internationally, probably about 16, maybe 16, 17. And then kind of highlight of the career for anybody really is going to the Paralympic Games. And I was about 18 when I went to Sydney 2000. But I think those 2 years before, 98, 99, 2000, were the real big changing points for me. And when I reflect on that, being 18 years old and being in that kind of environment, you're really lucky to experience it. And people often say, hasn't the Paralympic Games changed significantly? And it has, absolutely. I think London was great for TV and sponsorship and kind of pushing the equality element. But I think Sydney 2000 for me really was the first one that really kind of captured the audience in terms of coming to watch swimmers swim, coming to watch runners run. And I remember in my race, I think there was about 14,000 in the swimming venue for my race. And I think there was about four Aussies in, three Aussies in my final. Luckily enough, I beat them all, but I didn't win. So
yeah, I mean, I'm definitely interested to find out a bit more about that race. But like, what did it feel like when you were swimming in front of 14,000 people, like in Sydney, and you, however many years earlier on, it being said that you weren't going to be able to do much at all?
Yeah, I think it's about having people around you to make sure that you can take it in and you can take your development in. And that was one thing that really helped. At the time, I was working with a really great performance lifestyle officer called Rachel, and she really did help me kind of navigate some of the challenges of being a student and being an athlete and taking some of these big occasions in. So it really helped to have people around you that could keep you grounded and not kind of fly away to the stars thinking you'd made it. So that was really useful. I think having good parents as well really helped. My mum and dad always kind of said to me that, like, you're never going to be a swimmer forever. So you need to remind yourself that going to these great places is an honour and a privilege. But when you get home, it's, you know, back to what kind of really matters. And again, I think for my point of view, I often reflect and kind of thank educational processes for allowing me the time to absorb some of these great experiences, because I think education is such a pressurized environment, and if people that provide the education don't give space for athletes to both experience the world of being an elite athlete and experience the world of being a student, nothing works. So what I mean by that is, I mean, you know, part-time routes, I mean, real good support for for dual career athletes, you know, student athletes. Some universities do it well, others don't. And I think for me, Salford University provided a good level of balance for me to be able to achieve that. And I think that's really important. And it's a big kind of piece of reflection for me on how did I get the best out of my experiences versus balancing education.
And so at what point did you start doing your physio course?
So I was, so I started in 2003. And so I'd come out of Sydney. I was doing my A-levels. And my college was great as well. I went to a local college at Pendleton College and they just said, you take as long as you want to do your A-levels, you're all right. So when I'd finished my A-levels, I went into doing my degree in 2003. And it was a bit of a shock to the system in the sense that I tended to find that when I was swimming, I was thinking about university, and when I was at university I was thinking about swimming. So it's a bit of an internal tug of war, and I don't know whether other student athletes ever felt the same, but you almost feel like you're not putting enough into each pot. But actually then on reflection looking back, you probably every time I was in the water my studying was suffering, and every time I was studying my training was suffering, and you can never win. So I think that was a bit of a reflection point. And I think that was the point where I started to realise maybe my swimming was coming to an end, because my performances were starting to go a little bit. And I think it wasn't necessarily because of the sport of uni, because they were great. They said, you train away. I think it was the amount of pressure that I was putting on myself around kind of study and competing. And I think realising that people were catching you up and kind of close to beating you, and I just felt like I was struggling to keep pushing myself in that direction. So I did decide to kind of call it a day, and it's only 12 months down the line I was sat with my coach, and I started to realize it was probably a knee-jerk reaction, but by that time it was a bit too late in the day, you know, to kind of revert really. And I think my principles around education first always kind of jumped out in front. So when I was thinking about going back to swimming, I was like, no, education first, let's get that done and see where you go.
And then I know you may want to skirt over the final, but just to talk to me through the final.
So I remember kind of preparing for the heat swim, and I had a level of anxiety that I felt I could control, but I'd not really thought about the impact that the crowd might have, because when you walked around the pool in Sydney, you didn't see the crowd until you came to the far side of the pool. So you'd walk round to the block, and I got to lane, I think for the heat I was in lane 6, I think. So it was closest to the crowd, near enough. 7 and 8 were closest to the crowd. And I looked up, and it was like, you know, these kind of steep stands that you see, and the crowd was there. So I think I let anxiety get a little bit of the better of me in the heat, but I actually swam really well, and I was fastest into the final. So my coach was dead happy, I was dead happy. And with a 50 metres butterfly, there's no room for error, really. You've got to be in quickest, and every part of the race has got to be perfect to be in with a shout. In the final, I probably didn't have the same level of composure, because I wasn't expecting to get lane 4 in the final anyway, to be honest. And I think that kind of put a bit of pressure on me. And lo and behold, I didn't get a great start. My start was terrible. And at 25, I was 8th, you know, and then by the time I touched, I managed to kind of get to second. And disappointment at first, and then euphoria after that. And then as time has gone on, it's one of those situations where I should be pleased. It's a Paralympic medal. It's great. But people people often say, is it your best achievement? And it's not. Like, my best achievement is becoming a physiotherapist, working with British Paraswimming. That is my best achievement, not the medals that I've won. I'd love to be prouder of my medal. I'd love to have it up on the wall, but it's what it is.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. It is an amazing achievement. Just as an objective bystander, it is incredible. So amazingly well done for that, because it's a unique experience and achievement. So it's it's really, really impressive. So then, like, how was the experience being in Sydney, just in general?
I think what they do really well in sport is they try and take that kind of the shock of the experience away from you by exposing you to the environment earlier, so that, you know, the venue doesn't, or the city itself doesn't take too much from you, because ultimately you want to make sure that by the time you get to the race, everything else is irrelevant. So you get it out your system. You get Sydney, the city, out the system. You get the flight out the system, because you've all done it before. So I think in the lead up to Sydney, I probably went to Sydney and Brisbane and that kind of area probably 3-4 times, just so that we could acclimatise and get used to it. And we did a test event. It was called the Southern Cross Games, and that was the opportunity to get the touristy bit out where, you know, get it out your system, so that when you come to land for the games, that's irrelevant. Because you can get a little bit kind of starstruck in terms of some of the nice places you visit, and the desire to go and see the Sydney Opera House can sometimes detract from performance. And I think from a support staff perspective, we've always got to be mindful of that. So preparation was key. So it was great to see Sydney when I could enjoy it, you know, and when I came to do the business end and swim, I knew I'd already done it. So from that perspective, I think during competition, what was the best feeling was actually the engagement of the crowd. So I came out into the venue areas to meet family, and as soon as the crowd saw that you had, you know, an accreditation on, they were super interested in you and your history. And that, for the Paralympic movement, that was great. For me as a Paralympic athlete, that was great. You know, it showed that things were moving forward.
Yeah, I can imagine. Oh, it's interesting that you went over there quite a few times before. Nice part of the world, albeit quite a long way away.
Yeah.
So then when you were at university then, so at what point, you had a clear mind from what you'd said to your former teammates about coming back and working in that. Was that a very clear plan to get back into working there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the desire to come and be a physio was kind of brewing as I was a swimmer. So, you know, I absolutely remember pitching up at EIS at the National Squash Centre. And I used to bring my schoolwork, and I used to get my physio treatment, do my university work or college work, and then go in and watch and observe physios treating athletes. And at the time, it was a physio called Matt Lancaster, who was an absolute massive kind of massive reason behind my fires for physiotherapy burning. Like, he would just say, you can come in anytime, you can spend as much time as you want with me learning about physio. And I think he's back home in Tasmania now, but that experience was just absolutely crucial in kind of developing that desire to become a physio. Once I managed to get on the course, and I remember Rachel, my performance lifestyle officer, we put a bit of a plan together to go and see that open day and that open day and that open day and that open. And every open day that I kind of pitched up at, my desire to become a physio was even better or even bigger. And not once did I think about my disability. Not once did I think, oh, am I going to be able to kind of manage it? In actual fact, the only time that it was ever questioned was when I was on clinical practice. But my own feeling was that I would never struggle, like, because it feels natural to me to become a physio. Where or who better to provide physiotherapy to patients, to athletes, than somebody that has received the benefits and the advantages of it. So for me, that was really important. And when I did start university, don't get me wrong, I wasn't one of these physios that wanted to go into uni and then do sport. Like, absolutely not. I think back then there was a real kind of key message around learning your trade, going to places that you can learn and develop safely. And then once you've got the skills and knowledge, then to go into sport, that's the time. But sport evolves just like education, and a lot of sporting environments now have really good opportunities for students to develop or learners to develop. So, you know, but back then I felt going into the NHS was the best route for me to kind of make sure that I could fail safely and learn from it, and make sure that I learned to have the resilience and robustness, both physically and mentally, to deal with elite sport, because that's tough.
Yeah. And so what was that pathway then? What was your first role?
Yeah, so I spent a lot of time thinking about this because I wanted to make sure that the first role was one that ticked the boxes that I was looking for. So what I was looking for was a small hospital. So a hospital that I could develop a bit of a personality in, a bit of a kind of support network that I would see every day. And that, you know, because I think sometimes in bigger hospitals, you've got that many environments to work in that before you know it, like, you know, 18 months, 2 years have gone down the line, and some of your key rotations that you needed, you might not have done. So I wanted to be in a small hospital where I got my key rotations done around people that I would see every day. Now, granted, I'm talking kind of early 2000s here. Things might have changed in the hospital environments. And, you know, I'm not making a sweeping statement in the sense that big hospitals can't do that. But that was my perceived belief. I wanted to be in a small hospital so that I felt a little bit more comfortable. So I took my first role at Warrington and Halton General Hospital, and they were great. Again, they didn't see, or they were able to see past my disability, and not once did they ever kind of ask me about, you know, do you see disability as a particular challenge? They were willing to learn as we go on, like I was. You know, I often say it myself, it's progress, not perfection. You know, I think that's one of the things that I try and live by, and I think in my clinical practice in the NHS that was definitely the case. Don't get me wrong, they didn't just leave me to it. The support was great, and they would often check in and see how I was getting on. So I started my career at Warrington General Hospital, and I just felt so comfortable that I didn't really have a desire to leave, really. So I did my key rotations in all the key areas: orthopedics, rehab, MSK, respiratory. And then kind of after 18 months or so, I wanted to specialise in MSK, and luckily enough, it was a really great environment for hospitals to look after their own, if that makes sense. So they like to invest in their employees. So if that meant progression, that was certainly kind of there for you. So I managed to kind of get into MSK early in the NHS relatively. And then I did that for five, six years. So in different environments, kind of orthopaedic-led MSK environments, GP and self-referral type environments. So yeah, that was it really.
And so, I mean, it's great you're in a good environment. Whatever environment you're in work-wise, it's well, you want it to be positive, or else it's not a fun place to be.
Yeah.
And so what was the next step then from there?
Well, it was, yeah, so the next step really was I came into the staff room at Halton General Hospital, and I noticed a leaflet on the board, and the Alexandra Hospital, which is private hospital in Cheadle, were looking for bank staff. And I thought, oh, quite fancy the look of that. So I actually inquired and I said, and they said, send your CV in. And I got an interview, and I got a couple of evenings work and a Saturday morning there. And this kind of was the first time really where the pace of an MSK environment slowed down a wee bit, and you started to be able to develop your more enhanced skills and learning. And again, I've not worked in that environment for a long time, so whether that's changed or not, I'm not sure. But I was able to get a sense of spending a little bit more time with patients, a little bit more time in planning and delivery. And what was really good about the department at the Alex was it was a super sociable department. Like, you know, we would often go out and socialise and kind of get to know each other a lot better. And that helped kind of, you know, working dynamics. And I think that then started to kind of help me understand what type of physio I was and what type of or how best I learned or how best I kind of developed and thrived. And that was through that kind of social element. I'm very much very much driven by the kind of the importance of socializing. So that was really cool. And I had kind of visions of wanting to carry on with the Alex, like, and even looking at full-time roles and part-time roles and trying to find a bit of NHS and a bit of the Alex. But then obviously the British Paraswimming job came.
And then, so just going back to the culture then that you had at the Alex and the social side, like, how, what was that like? Like, what was the...
It was, I think, ultimately for me, I just felt super comfortable to be able to explore my abilities to a higher level. And you just felt you could have conversations with people on the spot, conversations, and you'd know that anybody that you speak to could add value to what you're doing. But being sociable and spending time socially with work colleagues allowed the kind of the barriers to fall, and that just made you feel like you were super supported. So that was really, really important for me, that knowing that I could speak to anybody and they could provide kind of feedback or input into whatever I was doing. And again, it just gave me super confidence, like, to just to keep going, because, you know, they were just there for support.
Yeah, that's really good. Really good. And then, so how torn were you when the para job came up?
Oh, do you know, so it came up, and in my head, I was thinking about the scenarios. You know, you play scenarios out and you go, okay, what are the options? If I go for the British Paraswimming job and get it, do I carry on my private work, or do I carry on my Alex work, or can I do both and do British Paraswimming? So in the end, it was a bit of a minefield of what best to do. And luckily enough, British Paraswimming basically made mind up for me. They basically said, you can either do your private work or continue Alex. You can't do both. And that was I felt like if I carried on at the Alex, I'd be forever cancelling clinics because I'm away. And whereas privately, I had control of my own diary and I was able to be a little bit more flexible. So with a heavy heart, I handed my notice in at the Alex. And to this day, people ask me, what job did you most enjoy doing? It was my time at the Alex. If I could relive it, I would, because the people were brilliant.
Who was part of the team, the Alex then?
So Ben, Tomlinson and Paul Harrison were the physios that led the service in the Alex. And so they were like my line managers. And they were the ones that really did kind of read my love for the job, because I felt like they were super supportive. And then, you know, I remember what we used to do. In actual fact, on a Thursday evening, we used to go for, I love a curry, so we used to go for a curry. And I got the Manchester Evening News article for the 10 best curries in Manchester, and I just said let's do the 10. So whoever was available on Thursday evenings, we'd go for a curry, or it might have been a when what day did I do? Tuesday or Thursday, I think. So yeah, but Ben and Paul were great. So yeah, it was just great. If anybody gets the opportunity to work there, I really enjoy it.
Where was the best curry?
So if I have to put my hat on the best curry, I would probably go Kandakar. So Kandakar is Burnage. So it's one of these places you go in and you just think, oh, like, but the food's great. So Kandakar is really good. And so are you familiar with the Curry Mile?
Yeah. I'm in Didsbury, yeah. So it's very close to me.
So top of the Curry Mile, there used to be a big one on the left, big pink sign. It used to be called Sangam. And they've got one in, I think it's Didsbury, Sangam 2.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. So they were good, but the big one in the Curry Mile is not there anymore. So they moved it into the city centre. And the problem is, as soon as you move it into the city centre, prices go up, don't they? So,
yeah. It's like Shere Khan's on there. There's an influence of that one. But yeah, the Curry Mile's a great, great spot, isn't it?
Yeah. So a way to get to know me, go for a curry. That's my...
I'll bear that in mind.
Yeah.
So yeah, going back to the team you were with there, Ben's gone on to do quite big things, hasn't he, within the group. So he's been promoted. I've not caught up with him for a while. So you reminded me to give him a shout. Wasn't Paul's wife a physio?
Yes, I think, yeah. If I'm right in thinking, I think she was a physio, and I think Paul's kind of followed Ben into that kind of managerial role.
Yeah.
So, and I think they were made for it because the support they gave me were great. So, I think physios that I've worked with when I've been at British Para Swimming, Ellie Richardson, she's there doing her shoulder specialty bit. She came just after I left, I think. So, so I keep seeing physios and crossing paths with physios that have worked in the same places. So it's a small world physio, really, isn't it?
No, it definitely is. Ellie's great as well. Yeah. So yeah. I'm still trying to get her on here as well. So yeah. I'll give her a mention on that.
Yeah.
So talk to me about what it was like at para swimming.
Yeah. So, first of all, I think the biggest... I'd probably say it's the biggest honour that I've ever had, like to feel like I can kind of get a role and a job that was a big driver in me becoming a physio is an honour. And anybody that gets the opportunity to, or the opportunity to potentially do it, snap it up with two hands, because ultimately, if you don't do it, you might wake up years down the line and regret it. So it's the most kind of honoured I've ever felt. So I'm really pleased that the opportunity came. It was a bit like jumping out the frying pan and into the fire, to be honest. It was certainly a steep learning curve, and one that to this day, had I not had the level of support that I did, probably would have been like near impossible, you know. So it was an NGB role, but the English Institute of Sport were fantastic providers of support for me. So you know, Ian Horsley, Lee Herrington, like they were on my doorsteps, great physios that you kind of read about and listen to, and they were super, super keen to help where they could. So it was just really nice to feel like if I needed help, they were there. So once I'd got my feet in the door and kind of got to know the athlete group and, you know, started traveling and seeing the world as a physio, I think it was like you're living a bit of a dream, really. I think the biggest thing that kind of hit home for me was that in many ways, the support that you had in the NHS, you don't always get in sport. And I had it, but not to the level. So what I had to do was I had to trust my gut a little bit. You know, you had to kind of go, I feel like this is right. But just make sure that you learn from some of the more challenging experiences that you kind of face. And I think the best thing that I did was I took that kind of the sociable side that really made me feel comfortable and tried to incorporate it into the way that I was a physio. So, you know, I tried to have a good relationship with swimmers to make sure that they felt like they could approach me, they could work with me. Granted, working with some athletes is easier than working with others, and you're not going to get on with everybody. That's sport, you know. But as long as you stay professional and respectful, you know, you managed to kind of navigate through some of those trickier ones. So it was just an honor to work for them, really.
And what were some of the memorable experiences of achievements or anything whilst
working there? So I think the best memory, I'm just trying to think, like, obviously going to Rio was great experience for me, and seeing the team do so well, that was really, really good to see. Tokyo was a bit strange because we didn't have a crowd, but the team still did really well. I think if I had to pick a highlight, you know, I've got a mate that I used to swim with, Sasha. He's a Paralympic swimmer, retired now. Just watching him smash his 200 IM and 100 breaststroke and win double gold medal when people were saying he was over the hill, that was quite a nice, even from a physio's perspective. I think, you know, with a physio's hat on, it's seeing people that you've worked with, trying to get them to the games, actually doing the job, and being there. So that's always good. So, yeah, I think just seeing the swimmers swim, really, and winning the medals.
How was it for you going from, so the difference between being an athlete and then a few years later, you're on the other side, so to speak?
Yeah, it was tricky. It was tricky because I was being asked to convey messages that sometimes athletes weren't too happy about or didn't agree with. And, you know, it's like, you used to be one of us. I'm like, well, I'm not now, you know. So at times it was super challenging, and the dynamic was a bit strange, and I'd often speak to some of the swimmers that I used to swim with when I'm treating them for this, that and the other, and, you know, they said, actually, after a few months, it you know, it's fine, like, felt fine, it felt, you know, felt normal. And so, yeah, it was difficult at first, but I think it was difficult more from my point of view than theirs, really. And again, it's just having the level of support from other members of the staff. Just if I've got a bit of a concern about how do I approach this, how do I approach that, they were always there to provide support, you know.
I can imagine your experience must have been really helpful for them outside of even being a physio, just for in terms of what they would expect and so on.
Yeah, because again, one of the key messages that I always used to kind of pass on to athletes was like where's your plan B? Like, what, you know, what you're going to do when you're not swimming? Like, I had some great support. Like, where's yours? Like, what are you doing? Particularly when you've got an injury, distraction is really important, isn't it? Like, distraction from the daily grind of rehab, you know, go to college, learn. Go to uni, learn. Like, so I always used to kind of challenge the athletes and go, come on, what are you doing? Some were good, some were really proactive, some just didn't really know what direction to go down. And I used to just reflect with them and just say, look, my performance lifestyle coach was great. Like, utilize them. That's what they're there for, you know, really crucial. So that, you know, I think for me, it was just making sure that they always thought about the future, because what I didn't want to see them doing was stopping swimming and not having anything, you know.
Yeah. And then, so how did that come to an end, working there?
Yeah. So, British Swimming went through a restructure And to be fair, it was probably coming, like, you know, the way that other programs, athletics, cycling, it was probably coming. So, and obviously with any restructure, you have significant changes and, you know, and unfortunately, I lost quite a few friends through kind of redundancy or getting new jobs or just kind of leaving. And it probably hit me harder than I thought. Like, it was quite tough to go through that process. So I remember I just said to Joe, I said, my wife, I just said, I'm going to go for a walk in local park, Heaton Park. I'm just going to go for a walk. It was a Friday night. And I kind of just started to realise that maybe it was time to move on and give somebody else a go at kind of doing it. And it's funny because for months and months and months, well, quite a while ago, Duncan Mason, who I worked with privately at Worsley, and he's been great. Like, Duncan's just kind of massive, massive support privately and kind of helping me learn the roles around sport physio. He's been great. And I used to say to him, "Duncan, tell me when the jobs come in. Tell me when the jobs at uni are coming." He says, "I will." And every time he told me, he says, "There's a couple of jobs coming. I'm not ready yet." So I'm not ready yet. And then I said, "There's a couple more coming, so I'm not ready yet." Anyway, so after I decided, I said, "Don't tell me when the jobs, I'm ready." So he told me and I kind of applied. And luckily enough, I was lucky enough to get the job. And when I look back, I'm very focused on a career plan, like, and it's dead easy to kind of tell people, stick to your plan, have a career plan, stick to it. But people say, what are you going to do now? I said, I'll have to rewrite one and rethink, you know. But then it also makes me feel like, or, you know, kind of when I took the job and settled in, I started to think, what are the negatives of sticking to a career plan? Like, you know, what should I have done, something a bit left of field? Should I have kind of, you know, swayed off the career plan? Should I have kind of took a leap of faith into something that I wasn't expecting? So that's kind of what I've done, really. That's what I'm going to try and do. Let's do that. I'm going to do some things that I'm a bit uncomfortable with. I work with a great coach, and a lot of coaches say the same thing. They say you need to get comfortable being uncomfortable. You know, and some people can perceive that as being quite aggressive. Like, what do you mean uncomfortable? But I see it as like, God, if you don't keep challenging yourself, like, you could just get too stale. And you could just kind of retire in the job. And that's one thing that I don't want to do. So in this new career that I've got now, I'm taking a few riskier side steps, shall we say.
And how's that feeling?
It's good. Well, I've took my first one. So I said I'd never work in football. And I'm just about to start with the FA at weekend. I have horrible images of me running on pitch and tripping up. My mum used to say I'd trip over a piece of cotton. So I have terrible images of kind of running on field and tripping up. And so that was one of the reasons. And I love football. And sometimes I always think if I worked in football, it'd take that love away. So I didn't fancy doing it. But this opportunity came and I thought, I'll take it and see what happens. So luckily enough, it's futsal. So I don't have to run on any grass yet. So that's coming. And I'm hopefully very shortly starting my research journey. So that's another little step forward.
Oh, great. Yeah, you've got a lot going on then. That sounds very, very exciting. And then just for people, you've gone through a whole range of different things there. But what would your advice be for people thinking about getting into physio into this area?
I think... It's funny you should say that, because we as a university are really keen on interviewing all our applicants. And I've done a load of interviews of late. And I think the biggest and best piece of advice that I can give to people that want to get into physio is, first of all, experience isn't just about hospital private practice sport. Experience is about speaking to people. It's about being able to communicate, being able to have those interpersonal skills that build rapport and build relationships. So, you know, just because you've not got any physio experience doesn't mean that you can't relate some experiences that have really challenged your personal skills or your interpersonal skills and link that to why you want to be a physio. That being said, I still think if you want to be a physio student, you've still got to work hard on trying to get some of that experience, because it is important. But equally, when you are looking to prepare for life as a physio student, like learn how to interview, learn how to speak to people, like what makes a good interview technique. I remember when I was at college, like our careers advisor was great. She sat us down in front of videos and said, which one's a great interview, which one's not? How do you structure an answer on your experience? So I think what's really important for students wanting to look into physio is being able to draw experiences, use them to answer questions, but in a structured way. So what does a good interview look like for a physiotherapy degree course?
And like when you're interviewing these people then, so around that, it's trying to pick up someone's personality or how they can do those things isn't always that easy in a relatively short interview. So what are the things, you don't have to give away your insight.
No.
Whatever you can share on this, yeah. I am interested in it.
I think like our ethos around interviewing is just kind of getting to know the student. Like we're not bothered too much about their experiences. We're not bothered too much about the backgrounds. We just want to know what kind of a person they are and how well they can communicate and how well, how well they brought some of their kind of research and understanding of the NHS into an interview environment, really. Our university is really important when it comes to building relationships with students. We have a real pride in some of the pastoral support that we've got here. And I think that comes heavily through the interview process that we do. And I think for me, it's more about getting to know the person behind the prospective physio student, and that's why we do it, really.
Yeah, no, it's good. And you mentioned as well when we met up recently about some of the modules that you're doing. I think it was the first year that you mentioned about more around like the non-NHS route or like the business integration of things.
Yeah, so what I run the Principles of Exercise Therapy module at the university, and what I try and do there is really get the students' understanding of designing and delivering an exercise program. Okay, what's more important is that communication component. You don't need to be the best understander of physiology and adaptations to exercise and this, but as long as you can communicate a good exercise program to your patients, that's the key. But also, I think from my point of view, seeing exercise in different areas has really helped. So seeing it from an NHS perspective, but seeing it from a sporting environment has really allowed, or working with strength and conditioning coaches and working with sports therapists has really allowed me to try and bring the three together to produce a module that starts to increase physiotherapy students' confidence in exercise design and delivery. Because I think more and more now we're seeing in the NHS that sports therapists and sports rehab and S&C coaches, they're all coming into the clinical world, and that's brilliant. That's absolutely brilliant. But it's about making sure that when we're all in that environment, we're working effectively together and we're learning from each other. So what I try and do is bring components of the other two schools into what I'm teaching. You know, when we teach neurology, it's amazing how much MSK stuff overlaps into neurology. You know, you speak to Ian Horsley about a lot of the breathing work that he does and shoulder pain, a lot of respiratory breeds into MSK. So in essence, I feel like the way forward from an exercise point of view is working with strength and conditioning coaches, working with sports rehab and sports therapists to try and produce a more interdisciplinary approach to exercise, as opposed to you do that, I'll do that, you do that, you know, because that's certainly not how it works Oh, that certainly is not how it worked when I was working with British Para Swimming. I had a great relationship with my S&C coaches, Tim Stevenson, Jamie Barnard. So it was, strength and conditioning coaches, they taught me loads, and hopefully I taught them plenty as well.
Yeah, no, I think it definitely is becoming more and more that way, where you can see these things emerging and there's different job titles, but
yeah,
a lot of people are doing different things, whether it's biomechanists, physios are doing a lot of that now, sports rehabbers. So no, it is a really interesting time. Richie, really thank you for sharing your story. It is a fascinating one. And again, congratulations on your achievements to date, and good luck in your time at the FA as well.
Yes, thanks a lot, mate. Nice to speak to you. And now that I know you're only down the road, you'll have to give us a shout.
Exactly. Yeah, well, that's it. We'll get those curries booked in.
Yeah, mate. Cheers. Thanks a lot.
Cheers, Richie. Thank you.